You're just not paying attention.
If anybody ever orders a shepherd's pie, that's the one.
I like you. I like you. We just met, and I love you. I love you.
I was with my girlfriend one time, and she tried to order a shepherd's pie, and I looked at her in the face. I was like, we got a whole night ahead of us. You gonna order that? I was like, no.
Yeah. Not the best choice. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and reset things. I'm going to get Willie a baked potato with cheese and chili. And then we got Steve Berline coming up at 9:20. Don't go anywhere. It's Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network.
WFAN, WFAN-FM, WFAN-FM. FM HD1 New York and Odyssey Sports Station.
Welcome back inside the Bill Fortub studio. I got you. Funny, we can talk about the Yankees all morning. The Jets are going to go to the Super Bowl. The Giants are going to be better this year. The Mets may or may not make the playoffs. And chicken rings is what everybody's texting me and calling about.
Life is happening, Jerry.
And
life.
Telling me that White Castle is on Route 9 in Old Bridge. So thank you. I will try and at some point figure that out. I also was told by my friend Steve, who is a cop, you got to get the chicken rings with cheese.
Ooh. Yeah, that man.
White Castle's open 24 hours, so if there's any fast food place we could stop at on the way here at 3 a.m.
And I explained to you the Surf and Turf, which is the double bacon cheeseburger with the fish sandwich smashed together. You're welcome, America. That hits different.
The other thing, too, is when you're coming in at 3 a.m., you know White Castle does have breakfast now.
They do.
At 3 a.m., is it like all day long you could do that?
They better.
I'm serious question for you, Fleek, since you're sitting in his chair. If Al was sitting here during this conversation, or, hold on a second, will he explain to the Surf and Turf again?
Double bacon cheeseburger with cheese, and you get a fish sandwich with cheese. You smash them together, and you take one glorious bite, and you look to the heavens, and you say thank you. Now, tomorrow is a different story.
Okay, what's tomorrow?
Tomorrow, you're going to have your legs behind your head.
White Castle is a Friday food.
Try to push that out. Jerry, it is going to be Thunderdome in that bathroom, brother. It is going to be brutal.
All right, so now assume you're Al. What do you think his reaction to that sandwich would be?
I don't know if Al would ever speak to Willie again.
That's probably true. Oh, my gosh. That is funny. And a little birdie also told me, you mentioned not wearing socks.
I don't wear socks, man. I don't believe
socks. What about when you played?
No, I never wore socks. I was notoriously blisters? Known for sticking up the locker room solely because of my feet.
I would think so, but how did you not rip your feet up?
Because I didn't wear, so the studs on the bottom of my cleats, I like feeling them. I like feel like gripping them so I could shoot off the ball. When I had socks, I would slip and slide, and sometimes even with the tape, my feet were like really sweaty, so I hated them.
Wow. Well, I tell you, between the Surf and Turf and the feet stink, you must have been something.
Yeah. I am inexperienced, Jerry.
The Bachelor.
I am inexperienced.
Oh, that is very funny. All right. Anyhow. So there you go. There's the fast food segment of today's program. And now I know that maybe they'll make a stop tomorrow. Who knows? We shall see.
You got to do it, Jerry.
We'll see. Maybe. Steve Berline coming up in a little while. We're going to talk some NFC East football with him. We'll get to that. Just quickly to recap, if you were just waking up, the Mets did play late last night in Arizona, did get a win, and there was a lot of things to like about this game. Sean Manaea continues to just pitch fabulously, like an ace, quite frankly. Hell, Brandon Nimmo said it's the closest thing he's seen since since Jacob deGrom, which is an interesting comment to make, too. Nimmo had some hits. Pete Alonso with the home run. Lindor on base again, couple more hits, continues to just play really well. JD Martinez on base doing things. All in all, and you started with Alonso this morning, just talking about how if he gets going, especially early in games.
It all starts with him. And what he sets the tempo and pace. And I think we talked about it, I think the last time I was on, you know, I forgot who they played, but there was so much credit to Lindor, and we got to give Lindor credit. But Pete sets the tone from a different level because he's expected to be that guy. And when you're on the road and against the Diamondbacks, or a team, whatever, however you feel about them, there has to be a sense of, because of the way they started the season, now that they're three games behind yep. the Braves, yep. they now need somebody just to kind of be that champion horse. This is where Pete Alonso needs to come into fruition for him to be able to do that last night. Now they have to win one out of these two. They also have to go into Chicago and beat the piss out of them. So the momentum starts to happen. So my point to it all, there cannot be no more setbacks with the Mets. It's onward and forward because they've proven they can rally. Now it's time to move forward.
All right, getting in the mind of the player for a second, because all season long we've talked about Alonso. And again, the numbers don't look bad. But if you've watched it every day, yeah. he has struggled. There's not a question about it. Do you think with all of the contract stuff that's been out there that clearly has been on his mind, is it possible, in your mind, that now playing for your playoff lives coming mm-hmm. down the stretch, maybe that takes a back seat, meaning the contract takes a back seat to, we got to get our crap in gear because now we're three games out and we're basically playing for our lives, like I said.
Yeah, I think with Pete, as far as we're talking about legacy, you mean?
I mean in terms of almost relaxing and having the contract be secondary because now it's about, you know, like you go through the season is a long journey.
Correct.
And you're pressing, you're trying to put up numbers, you're hoping to win along the way too. Well, now you're in the mix. I mean, you are right there, you're three games out. And it's almost as if you get to September now with it in reach, almost like that contract. You must forget about it because now it's about, we got to win the game.
You have to forget about it. I think that's just universal for a ball player because anytime you put money in front of the day-to-day goal or when it comes to winning, preparing, winning, getting it done, then you're robbing the locker room. You're robbing your brother next to you. You're robbing the guys you're going to bat for. So the money is always going to be in the back of your mind. But right now, this team has to win, right? I think it's suited for him, especially you talk about momentum. That's been a big word of this morning. You know, if you're really trying to fish for Juan Soto, imagine this team goes into the playoffs, they make a run. Now Juan is like, oh, you know, mm-hmm. okay. They're not over there just thinking it up, you know, just or collecting checks. They're fighting for something. Every star athlete wants to join a ball club that's fighting.
Yep.
It doesn't matter how you start, it's how you finish. So they have the momentum right now. Can they carry it on and walk it into September, which we showed the schedule. It's not going to be easy. They got the Nats. You know, you got the Braves. I think they got the Red Sox in the start of the month. So they got to start picking up steam. And last night was a good shot.
The one thing I don't like that they, and just from the standpoint of the division, the race, now it turns out to be the wild card race and the team that's in front of them, finished the Brewers. It's a weird ending to the season. I mean, and Milwaukee's really good too. Now, I don't know what Milwaukee will look like at that point. I don't know if they dial it back, getting ready for the postseason, who knows? But those final six games of the regular season, really the final 10 games, Phillies into the mix, that is a gauntlet of a schedule.
Yeah, and this is where you start looking at, and this is why you're happy with the output from Manara last night,
mm-hmm.
That he was able to kind of rally and put out a solid outing. But overall, man, like I look at this Mets team right now, and then I'm talking about from Pete Alonso's standpoint, the contract is going to happen regardless. Like, something's going to happen
somewhere,
from it.
Yeah.
You know, so at this point, it's preserving what you have right now and making sure this ball club doesn't take an awkward step backwards where we're like, all right, well, they're done because the Braves are stepping back. You know, the Braves are going to continue to fight and everybody ahead of them. So we'll see.
And we will see. And as we stand this morning, three out with about 5 weeks to go and all those games, we'll see what they can do. I will tell you, though, just going into the season, and it's a weird way that we got here, they're kind of the team I did expect. I really did. I thought we would go into September with them having a chance at the postseason. The one place I was wrong was I thought they would hover around playoff positioning. I thought they would have done more at the trade deadline. Okay. I was wrong on that. They did make moves, but not moves like I thought. They never went after a big name. Jesse Winker is wonderful, but he's not the big name player that might have been out there. Other teams did that. They didn't. But, you know, you look at them now, 5-6 games over 500 with 5 weeks to go. They've put themselves in position to make a run.
And there's
no
glaring injury kind of just.
Not right now.
Right now.
You know, I mean, Starling Marte has been an issue.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you're right. Kodai Senga was an issue,
tonight?
But you almost
freaking
forget about
him. Chapman tonight?
No, tonight. Who's pitching
Severino,
tonight?
Severino, excuse me?
It's Severino
excuse
tonight
me?
Against
Rodriguez.
Eduardo Rodriguez.
Yes, Severino.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we'll see. So that's later tonight. They get another one with the Diamondbacks, who I think had won 6 or 7 in a row going into last night's game. And then before we break, you just quickly with the Yankees. To me, not a big deal. It's the same way when they lost the game in Chicago, where I know we had some fun with that. Win today, win the series, and you've done what you had to do against. Now, Baltimore did win last night, so they lost the game off the division lead, which is now one.
Yeah.
But that's one of those games. Patrick Corbin was on, which is a rarity these days, but he was last night, kind of gave them fits. Come back tonight, win the series, and move on.
I just don't want the Jazz Chisholm thing to fester anymore. Like, he has to clean it up on third.
A little sloppy. You know, it's funny. You would have thought that would have been the case when he first started playing there.
It wasn't. As he started off hot.
Very well.
I've never seen him so comfortable. And now he's starting to digress.
And even the error yet last night, while he probably throws the runner out at first, which is why I think the official scorer initially ruled that as a hit. And then you probably look further into it, and he probably would have had him by a step or so. Yeah. Even a play like that, while he's the third baseman, if you look at where that play is, he's playing shortstop. He's playing shortstop.
Yeah, he was rocked over.
Pats the glove once, and it's almost like he looked up and said, holy crap, this guy's burning down the line, and he just fired it wide. That, to me, it's going to happen, but for the most part, he's been okay there. You're right, though. He does have to clean it up. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll have Steve Berline with us. We will talk some NFL football, specifically inside the NFC East. We'll have Chris one more time and you along the way as well at 888-808-1019. It is Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network.
It's the Morning Show with Boomer and Geo.
All right, 9:21. It is Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo, coming to live from the Built Ford Tubbs studio. A lot of football today, as you can imagine. Fast food, too, some baseball. And we turn our attention to the NFC East today, and we talk to Steve Berline, now the lead analyst on Compass Media Network's coverage of Dallas Cowboys football. Steve, it's Jerry and Willie. How are you?
Hey, guys. What's happening? Thanks for having me on this bright and early West Coast California morning.
Beautiful out there, though. I know it's early. We do appreciate you. We do appreciate you getting up. I guess let's just start, before we talk more about the division, the CeeDee Lamb contract yesterday for the Cowboys. Clearly important that they got it done. Did you ever have a doubt, and what are your thoughts now that it is done going forward?
No, I didn't have any doubt that they were going to get it done. He's too vital a part of their team. The Cowboys did what they needed to do, and obviously if they would have not been able to get that worked out before the opening game, then the abuse toward Jerry Jones and the Cowboys in general would have been not tolerable. So Jerry Jones knew what he was doing the whole time. I think that CeeDee Lamb, he was making sure, I'm sure they were making sure that CeeDee Lamb was keeping himself in good shape and ready to go. And as Mr. Cologne knows, there's no way that CeeDee Lamb is not going to be able to hit the ground running week one. He knows how to play the game. He's taking care of himself. He'll be ready to go, and he'll make the Cowboys a lot better just by being out there, for sure.
So, Steve, just staying with the Cowboys, and I agree with everything you said, but I think for everybody that just heard that now thinks, goes, all right, when is Dak getting paid? Do you think Dak gets paid in season, or do you think it ever happens, or is it a wrap?
Well, I think Dak's a little different situation, and I think you can make a case for it either way. In all honesty, I've been really kind of talking about it myself over the last couple of years that, you know, sure, Dak is obviously an elite quarterback who can do things that very few can. He's very special in so many ways, but he's kind of got the same stigma that Kirk Cousins had, and that is, you know, he puts up great numbers every single week. He's always going to be up there near the lead in terms of overall statistics with touchdowns and completion percentage and points and everything else. But when you get to the big games, especially, you know, at the end of the year when you've got to win a game either to make the playoffs or to win a playoff game. I mean, Dak's 2-5 in the playoffs. And Jerry Jones, I'm sure, is looking at it saying, man, I mean, we got to pay this guy $60 million. And he's won two playoff games for us. And I think he's really in a kind of a catch-22 situation. I do believe they're going to get the deal done because, as we all know, there's nobody that the Cowboys can go out and get that is going to be able to play at the level, at least that we know of, that's going to be able to play at the level of Dak Prescott. So it's going to be a question that's going to be lingering, I think, for a while. I don't know when it's going to happen. I'm going to try to find out. You know, being the Cowboys analyst now for the Compass Media, I am going to figure out a way to get that information one way or the other.
Steve Borlein with us from California, Compass Media Networks. You played for the Cowboys in the early 90s, and I think that's about when the salary cap came into place. This is more of a philosophical question, I guess. You saw it prior during your playing career. You see what it is now. How different is this game when you talk about what the cap is, what it's, and how it's impacted the game and the way it used to be before we had the cap?
Well, I think the cap has impacted the game. Obviously, free agency has evolved and developed. The 1993 was the first year of free agency, and that combined with the salary cap changed professional football as we knew it, for sure. And but I think the money, we all knew the money was always going to be there, and the money was always going to continue to grow, and I don't think any of us really saw it getting to the point that it's at the point that it is, but we all knew the money was obviously, it was great at the time, nothing near what it is now, but the money was always going to continue to rise. But I think what's changed the game is the mentality of players, especially now what's going on with college, with the transfer portal and the players getting paid in college. And I think more importantly, the rule changes in the NFL. And again, Willie will know about this, and everybody really knows about it, but the changes in terms of how players not only play the game, the hitting and the player safety concerns, but also the training in the offseason. You know, the way that these guys are barely even have any contact at all throughout the course of the offseason. And even during practice during the week, it's just a different game on the body. And these players are going to play longer as a result of, which I think is a good thing. The money is going to continue to go up. And the players, I think they just come out now. A lot of these college players, especially the stars, they come out already as professional athletes. And their mentality is all about business, taking care of number one. And I think that does definitely change the game. We're going to continue to see these holdouts on an annual basis. And I don't know how feasible it is for it to continue going up the way that it's going up, but it's definitely not going to be coming down. We all know that. So it's here to stay, and it's good for these football players, and I'm happy for them.
Steve, speaking of contracts, we saw the Eagles lock up Jalen Hurts for the next 5 years, giving him the bag, if you will. The Eagles started off hot, 10-1 last year, then they took a nosedive. What's your honest expectations for this Eagles team coming into the season this year?
I really expect them to bounce back well. I think that last year really was a wake-up call for them. I think it caught them totally off guard, what happened, especially the later part of the season. We know that the Jalen Hurts wasn't healthy for the whole season. Wasn't the same player last year as he was the year before. But I think that's a good football team. I think they have Super Bowl expectations. They had some things that obviously they needed to patch up based on what happened last year. The defense, they had a few holes defensively. They need to find a way to continue to evolve offensively. I think Sirianni maybe got a little bit comfortable after the previous year as well, but I think they're going to come back now with the mentality of, hey, we got to show the world that we're a heck of a lot better than what we are, that 2023 was an aberration, and that we can contest for the Super Bowl this year. That's a good football team. Jalen Hurts has proven he's a winner. He's now got his contract, and I think they're going to be a big challenge for the Dallas Cowboys in the NFC East.
And I completely agree with that. And last year was a weird year for them, as you guys point out, starting one. I will tell you, though, because I did get to do the Cowboy-Eagle game week, I forget what it was, 14-15 in Philly, and they were in that slide and they weren't playing well. And they were calling for Nick Sirianni's job at that point.
Yeah.
How aware, I don't even know if you ever even played for a coach that might have been on the hot seat, but how aware do you think the locker room is of the outside noise in regards to their head coach?
Well, with regard to whether I played for a coach on the hot seat,
yeah.
I had 10 head coaches in my first 14 years. So I was always playing for a coach on the hot seat.
Huh.
So I know that feeling very well, and it does put a lot of pressure on the players. As well as obviously on the coach and the coaching staff, because it affects everybody. But again, if it's something that really affects the product on the field, the way that you play, then you're in the wrong business. You're in the wrong line of work. As a professional athlete, you got to be able to go out there and get yourself ready to play every week, no matter what the situation is. And technically, everybody's on the hot seat. And the bottom line is you've got to go out and find a way to win, or the conversations will continue and heads will fall. And you've got to have the mental ability to get past that and go out and play at the highest level, or you're not going to be playing very long yourself anyway.
But quickly, Steve, so my only pushback, last year felt different. Between the incident with Big Dom on the sideline, there's clips of Hassan Reddick, who's now a Jet or will soon to be a Jet, him having some discourse with Sirianni. I mean, him and Jalen Hurts didn't seem like they were on the same page towards the back end of that season. I mean, for a guy who at the end of his presser when asked the question, now that you have a new OC, you have a new DC, what do you do? And he said, control the culture. And I almost wanted to throw a chair at the TV, because they're not yes, they're paying you to control the culture, but they're paying you to be the difference maker from when you have the two cans on your head on the sideline. So for me, Steve, what does Sirianni have to do to win back this locker room? Because a part of me feels like he did lose it, right? And then there's another part of me feels like, you know, he has to do something this year to kind of secure his job, whether that means going to the Super Bowl, as you just mentioned, or just letting the powers to be, meaning, you know, the owners, that they're in good hands for the next couple of years.
Well, I agree with you, and I probably didn't articulate it as well as you did right there. Sirianni made a lot of mistakes last year. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And I did say, I think he got a little bit too comfortable, got a little bit cocky.
Right.
And I think that showed up in how he handled those different situations. He has to definitely rebuild. I think that was probably his number one priority the off season. And as he said, the culture, he realized, I think, that it probably got a little toxic in there, and he had to win that team back. But everybody knows. I mean, it's been spoken about the whole off season that if the Eagles don't achieve and make a deep run this year, that he's probably going to be gone because of what happened last year. Even as they were 10-1, we all knew it was a paper 10-1. They were not playing good football through 11 weeks of that season, and it all showed up down the stretch. So, you hit it right on the head, Willie. The bottom line is that they have to win, and a big part of it is going to it's going to come down to whether or not he was able to win over that locker room during the offseason to get these guys to believe in him and be on the same page again.
Steve Berline with us, Compass Media Networks. Couple more for him. In the NFC East, you've got an odd thing going. The Giants can't beat the Eagles, the Giants can't beat the Cowboys, and the Commanders can't beat the Giants. It's very strange. The Cowboys obviously will beat them up twice last year, meaning the Giants. I'm curious, on the outside looking in, what the thought is of what this Giant team could be, what they think of Daniel Jones. You, as the Cowboys analyst now, the Cowboys have controlled them for a very long time. What do you think the upside is for the Giants?
Well, you look at what they did 2 years ago, and you say, well, they really did do it a couple years ago. They overachieved. I think everybody knew that was a much better season than they could have rightfully expected. I think everybody, including the head coach, Brian Daboll, were very surprised by what happened. But then the exact opposite happened last year. They underachieved across the board, starting with Daniel Jones and his injury issues. I think it's somewhere in between. I think this is a team that can definitely reestablish themselves as a decent football team if Daniel Jones plays decent. And I think he can. I'm one of the, probably I'm in the minority there, I think most people, most educated NFL people believe that he's never going to be the guy they need him to be. But I go back to what he did down the stretch 2 years ago, and the way that he was playing on a consistent basis, I forget about what's going on here in the preseason. I think he's going to go out and play decent, and this is going to be a football team that's going to be, you know, somewhere in that, you know, 7 to 8, 9 win games, or 7 to 8, 9 wins, and I think they're going to be competitive. I just think it's going to happen. My gut tells me that. I know I'm in the minority, but I believe that if they can get a little bit of a roll going, they get a little swagger back, they can put it together and find a way to be a competitive football team.
Yeah, I just think Daniel Jones is on a short leash. I think Brian Daboll is not going to let him have the type of season he had last year. Valid, you know.
But who do they have? Who do they have?
I think there's a reason why you have Drew Lock and DeVito up there. I think that why I wouldn't be surprised if they went to Drew Lock.
I'm with Steve on this. I think he's got the potential to be good. I do.
I want him to. They need him to be good. Yeah. I mean, they got a new offensive line for him. The defense, the strength of the team will be on the defensive side. But if Daniel Jones. I think he has to be better than good for this team to be successful. This is just my opinion. I think when you have Jalin Hyatt and you have Malik Nabers and Wendell Robinson, like you started to build some things around him where he has options. He now has to. You don't pay him just
gotta
to
do
be,
it.
You don't pay him to be mediocre. Yep. So
You know what he's got to be. He's got to be consistent. That's the bottom line. And every head coach will tell you the same thing. I just want my quarterback to play consistently. You know, at a level that gives us a chance. We don't want the highs and the lows, and we want to be able to know what we can count on week in and week out. And as you said, the defense is going to be the strength. They did put a lot of money in their offensive line, made some changes. I think that's going to be significant. It always is. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But you're right. He's going to have a short leash. But come on, Drew Lock. I mean, Drew Lock is not going to convince anybody that all of a sudden he's going to be a starting quarterback. So they don't have a starting quarterback on the team other than potentially Daniel Jones. So I think Daboll knows that's the horse he's got to ride. There's no alternative. It's going to be a failed season if Daniel Jones doesn't step up and play at a good level, at a consistent level.
All right, last one for me, Steve. When we talk about this division, we haven't mentioned Washington, so I don't think people expect much of them, but their head coach is Dan Quinn, who had a really good run in Dallas. Mike Zimmer from Dallas to Cincinnati to Minnesota, now back in Dallas. How about that transition? I know it's only a couple of preseason games that you saw, but from what you're hearing, how about the transition to Zimmer now?
Well, I'm going to give you an example. It's Dan Quinn, right?
Right.
Yeah, and we look at last year, what happened with the Houston Texans. They got a defensive head coach in D'Amico Ryans. They got a special rookie at quarterback, and all of a sudden their world changed. So don't put it past one of those kind of things happening with the Washington Redskins. I'm not saying I believe it's going to happen, but I absolutely love Jaden Daniels. I covered him on Compass Media Networks probably 4 or 5 times over the last 2 years. And the development, the evolution of what that kid did, it really, really made an impact on me. I was impressed. And I think he's going to be the offensive rookie of the year in the NFL. And he's my pick for it, at least. And I think that combination, if they play good defense, which is going to be a challenge, if they play good defense and he is as special as I think he is, you can see this thing turn around possibly this year. I'm not expecting it to happen, but I wouldn't be surprised to see if them end up becoming a team that can challenge in the NFC East.
And that would make the NFC East even better than I think it will be. Steve, I know it's early out there. Really appreciate you waking up, and I look forward to hearing you all season long. Thanks for,
Thanks,
for doing
Steve.
This.
You got it, guys. Take care.
All right, Steve Berline, Compass Media Networks, talking the NFC East, essentially. Cowboys, Giants, Commanders, and Eagles. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get CeeLo in here one more time. It is Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Don't go away.
It's the Morning Show with Boomer and Geo.
All right, fast-moving program, quarter to 10. Steve Berline. We appreciate the time. We've been all over the map this morning, as we usually are. Yeah, and here to wrap things up for us is one Chris. Has been out there in the newsroom. Anybody here? It feels like it's a... I know it's the last week of the summer. Very quiet, isn't it?
Jerry, where you been the last 5 years? It's very quiet in our newsroom in general.
No, but it has started to turn. There's been much more of a human presence out there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, no, there has been. Dove's here. Hoff is here.
So just the essentials.
Malusis is here. He's doing the midday today. Malusis is here. So we exchanged the usual pleasure. Everything else, all right? You good? Yep. Yeah, I'm good. Busy. All right.
Oh, kids?
Yeah, pretty much.
Right.
It was actually shorter than that. It was about 10 seconds.
No, even okay.
But we both laughed about it. You just made some eye contact, say hello, and you move on.
You move on.
That's about it.
All
you
right.
know.
So not all that busy.
How about our boy Pat Boy? I didn't realize this. I was listening back to something from Monday's afternoon show, which we don't have time for today. So I'll do it tomorrow with you guys. So he did our updates here in the morning, and then ran the board for the afternoon. So think about that. He was done with the update gig at 11.
Right.
And then did all the way 2 to 7 and then came back. Yes, that's a pretty good job out of him. Now, you're not impressed?
No. It's wonderful. I'm not saying it's a good
Jerry
job or not.
Like he's hard impressed.
No. Anytime, we all do this, all these crazy turnarounds.
I understand
it. Number one, he slept normal.
When?
Sunday night into Monday.
Normal?
He didn't work an overnight. That's what I'm saying. He was here at 5 o'clock. He got here at 5:15.
You know how it is.
He slept normal.
Okay.
Number one. Number two.
Such an interesting statement.
We're not working.
I understand.
I mean, I'm not saying.
I just didn't realize they had him lined up for two gigs
on
Monday.
And for somebody, this guy is, you know what, SNY? This guy will be on till 11 o'clock and be here at 4 a.m.
You're a grinder, CeeLo.
Right. So
you're a grinder.
Sometimes you have to be, you know?
That impresses you?
You got no other choice.
Yeah.
And good. I mean, amazing.
Talking on my guy.
A lot of people would say no, but I mean, we're not working. Come on.
Okay. I'm not saying he's doing hard labor for, 16 hours. It's not. I get it. But,
He's having a blast.
I didn't realize he was sticking around that day. So that's good stuff.
I did, because that's where the hairy ass comment came from.
Who has a hairy ass?
Because he tweeted, I've got a busy day lined up tomorrow.
Yeah.
Mornings with me and you on Boomer and Geo.
Right. He mentioned the board shift in that
tweet. And then I'm working in the afternoon. And Sean posted,
how many likes are you
trying to get? And he said, go shave your ass.
Yes, I saw that. I missed the afternoon show part. So bad job out of me.
Apparently our afternoon hosts, co-hosts, whatever we call them, Sean Morash, his wife makes him go outside to shave his ass.
Is that a real story?
Supposedly.
Outside. Where the neighbors can see you.
Instead
of in your bathroom where it's private.
Wife doesn't allow it.
I learned
that even in your own backyard on your property, if someone sees you.
A child.
Okay.
Not anyone.
You can get in trouble for that.
A lot of trouble.
If I didn't realize nude, that.
That'd be a sex offender, bro.
Yeah.
I have so many. How hairy is your ass?
Not mine.
You need a daily maintenance.
It's Sean's, not mine. Once a week, he said, right? Once a week?
Once or every 2 weeks. And
something
this is
like
a man who has no hair on his head, by the way.
Sort of like butt cheek swallowed a squirrel. Is it that bad?
I think the missus just likes it clean.
I guess.
Yeah.
So hey, he's the same guy. He uses that, like the back shaver.
Yeah.
So the neighbor's like, that guy's walking around with a dumper, but he really just has a hairy butt.
Pretty much.
Man,
Pretty much.
That's brutal.
The neighbors know because they watch him shave.
No, they're not watching.
We got some weird people working here. And that kind of leads to where we'll go tomorrow with what I tipped off me about Monday's show.
Fantastic.
With Evan, and you talked about personal hygiene earlier, but you don't wear socks and all that. Well, Evan, we know Evan's a weird guy. But this one, too.
All right, good. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, your superpower being you have hairy cheeks is a load of dressing.
And then real quick, because you mentioned a squirrel, real quick, did you see the story of the bird that was grounded because it ate a raccoon?
No, Jerry.
What? It's in the newspaper. I read the paper before we do
Once
the
you
show.
Told him you don't look for the cardinals on the tree branch on the golf course, he probably figured that was it for the birds.
No,
today.
I think it was a hawk that couldn't get off the ground because it just basically attacked and consumed a raccoon.
Wow.
A hawk?
A hawk, yeah.
Just took down the raccoon.
So obviously it's a robot a hawk, right?
No. This is a real
bird. A hawk can eat a raccoon.
Rescued bald eagle, too fat to fly after gorging on a raccoon.
Yeah, bald eagle makes sense. Okay. Not a hawk.
Rescued bald eagle.
Bigger than the other.
Ate a full raccoon.
Looks like a big bird to me. I don't know. You look like a fat piece of crap.
Sure that wasn't your ancestor or something?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. Anyway, we don't have a lot of time. So, but yeah, this is a real story. Again, I don't just make this stuff up.
The eagle had to be on drugs.
The eagle was on drugs?
It had to be. That's the only time you eat that much.
Look at the x-ray.
You're drunk or high.
Look at the x-ray. That looks like the day after all the fast food you were talking about.
That's the surfer turf right there lodged in that eagle. That's brutal.
All right, Chris, go ahead.
Brought to you by the farmer. the farmer's dog. Fresh human-grade dog food delivered right to your door, or maybe a raccoon or something.
Never know.
Exactly. Also brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Quickly, again, because I do want to get to some other stuff. A win for the Mets last night out west. They kick off their series in Arizona, beating the Diamondbacks 8-3. Sean Manaea strong through 6 2/3. Pete Alonso hit his 28th home run of the season. But no change in the standings, at least as far as the Braves are concerned with the wild card race, because they won, as did the Padres. So the Mets are still three out as they send Luis Severino to the mound tonight. Eduardo Rodriguez goes for the Diamondbacks, another 9:40 first pitch. And the Yankees, after making four errors last night in D.C., getting shut out through seven innings, take a loss to the Nationals, 4-2 the final. So they'll play the rubber game this evening. Carlos Rodon and Mackenzie Gore are your starting pitchers. We've got coverage at 6:05 here on The Fan and the free Odyssey app. Now, here's LeBron James on the shop, asked about the dynamic with Bronny, of course, now being on the same team with him, the Lakers, and how all that's going to go down.
What's your working relationship? Is he going to call you dad at practice in the locker room?
No, he can't. We already laid that down. Cannot call me dad in the workplace. All right. Once we leave out of the practice facility and the gates close, I can be dad again. In the car. If we ride together at home, I can be dad. No, he got to call me like 2-3 or Bron.
Okay.
Or, you know, goat if he wants to. That's up to him. I mean, it's up to him.
How about him throwing in the goat thing? I mean, I understand.
Very self-aware.
Yeah, and I know he's in the conversation, but like, wow.
It's a great question about Paul Perez, because as much as you, that's a question, the next question is, as a teammate of your son, and dad being my teammate as well, if Bronny's not on his task, am I allowed to get after Bronny? Is there a boundary?
Oh, I bet he'll get after him.
You know what I mean?
Well, if he gets after anybody else, then yeah. Yeah, why not?
You know what I mean? My point is that all has to be worked out before these guys really take the court. Because if Bronny is late on a rotation and I get after him for it, do I now be like, oh, I just yelled at LeBron, son, I may be losing a job here. You know what I mean? Like, because we know
I see. You're talking about the staff. I thought you meant LeBron getting after his own kid.
Oh, that's what I thought. I'm talking about from a teammate standpoint.
Okay. One of the other teammates or coach or something. Yeah. It's a little, could be awkward.
You see it all the time.
All the time.
So, yeah. That's a good question. I would think when you're on the court, I think you have to treat him like
Bronny's
just a guy.
Not as, you know, a young man who's in his eighth year, 28 years old. Like, he's still a pup.
Yeah. 20? 19? Right, 1920.
Streaming, you know, eating gummy fish. Like he's a young kid.
Yeah.
Now you're in a grown man zone. Like, I mean, so it gets different.
What's his name from the Knicks? Mike and Ikes.
Oh, Josh
Hart.
Yeah.
So he's right in line with that.
Yeah. I don't have all the U.S. Open stuff for you from day one. A couple of things though. I'll tell you that Dan Evans beat Karen Khachanov. The reason I bring that up. Longest U.S. Open match since they introduced tiebreakers in 1970. Yesterday,
really?
5 hours and 35 minutes.
The Connors match that went five sets back in like 90, I'm going to say 90 or 91. Clearly, it's not 5 hours and whatever you just said. Because that was one where I remember Jimmy Connors was an older player at that time. And I remember he gave away the second set because he fell behind. And I guess to conserve his energy, if I remember this right, he basically just gave away the last couple of games to get to game three. And then I think won it in five sets late into the night.
Not sure, man.
Okay.
Can't help you with that one. I tried. It's not readily available.
All right, I'm going to fly off the highway like that.
Now, you also I'm going to let him fly. He'll look at it while I continue here. So you also had reigning Wimbledon and French Open champ and 2022 U.S. Open champ Carlos Alcaraz get a bit of a first-round scare Tuesday.
It was Aaron Krikstein in 1991 against Jimmy Connors. I'm trying to find the time of the match. Go ahead, you can continue.
Well, longer than 5:35 because they said that was the longest one since tiebreakers in 1970.
Yeah, no.
Maybe it was close.
It might have been, but go ahead.
All right, so Alcaraz needed four sets to get by Australian qualifier Lee Tu, who had this to say about his counterpart after the match.
Yeah, look, I'm not gonna lie, you know, he came out and he's in his jacket and I was like, okay, and then we go to the coin toss and he took his jacket off And I was like, dude, this guy's a specimen. Like, from the coin toss, I was like, okay, this guy's a beast. Like, I just couldn't stop looking at his shoulder definition and the veins.
Taking it all in. He went on to say that Alcaraz has some serious weaponry.
Yeah, so, I would say so.
The 28-year-old, too, having some fun there. Good attitude after he gave Alcaraz a bit of a challenge. We
4 hours
from that,
and 41 minutes.
Oh, so not even close.
No, but the 39-year-old beat the 24-year-old Aaron
That
Fickstein.
Is pretty cool. I'm sure at the time it was epic.
Yep.
We go from that to European soccer, Jerry.
Okay.
And I won't pretend to know this team or club or league or whatever.
Pretend.
But I'll tell you, this is Dorking Wanderers manager Mark White.
Okay.
Who did not hold back,
just
reacting
a bit
to
outside.
Exactly. 2-1 win over St. Albans City, and more specifically, a certain extension of their opponent.
Sum that up. Especially the second half.
Well, first of all, I loved doing it to them St. Albans fans, singing all their sexually offensive songs like a bunch of and I love beating people like that and then giving it back. So to all them boys, they can go and cry tonight around their mummy's house. Good luck, lads. You got beat. Unlucky. Apart from that, I thought St. Albans were really well organized.
I love that.
Okay.
Apart from that, all right. You know, other than that, it was all good. So,
very cool.
All right, that's fun. I know I got to go. Moment of the day is brought to you by the family of Casamigos Tequilas, Añejo Blanco, Cristalino, Reposado, Mezcal, the new Casamigas Jalapeno. Casamigos Tequila brought to you by those who drink it. Remind you to enjoy each moment of your day responsibly.
Moment of the day.
Real quick, a choice. We've got Willie at 90 or Willie busting on me for being a movie quote guy. Which one we
Willie
want?
Willie at 90.
All right, very good. So you were presenting him with that possibility of what his life would look like. Should he reach that age?
You turn 90.
Oh, man.
How do you celebrate? What would Willie do?
90?
You made it to 90. How do you celebrate?
This is a great topic because my wife assumes that I'm leaving the earth before. Right.
Why? Because you're a big guy?
Well, in her mind, she's just like, you know, Willie, you don't eat healthy. you don't exercise as much as you should. I mean, that's obvious. You can tell by the shirt I'm wearing. So if I make it to 90, I'm going ham. Ham, you know the acronym. I'm doing it all. I'm strip clubs, amusement parks. I may not have a shirt on for 2 weeks. I'm doing it all. I'm going.
So you're
going
to party up.
I'm going to go nuts.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to set a tree on fire just because, I don't know. I'm just going to go bonkers.
Folks' homes are already like that, I feel like. You know, you got a lot of people just getting down with it over there.
There is that rumor that is out there. That is very true.
You know, I think old folks lead the category STDs.
Al and I have talked about that on the podcast.
They play Find a Pickle in the Dark a lot. It's a popular game.
It's good to know it still works at that age.
Well,
For some, it might not.
Yeah, at this point, it doesn't matter. Let's just touch each other.
Throw all the money on that, baby.
Yeah. Let's just figure out what part still works.
Getting right to the point there, Willie. I love that.